The government looks far and wide for answers to its most challenging problems. And just yesterday, the White House hired 27 new presidential innovation fellows from around the country to come in and help. Sometimes solutions are no further away than our own backyard. A new Virginia nonprofit called Tandem NSI aims to link the government with technology entrepreneurs without a lot of red tape. Founder Jonathan Aberman of Amplifier Ventures joins me now in studio, and he's along with him is one of the best-known veterans of federal contracting, Ed Bursoff. Gentlemen, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Morning.
All right, Jonathan, you believe we've got our own Silicon Valley right here between the Capitol building and South Dulles Airport. Tell us what's going on.
Well, first of all, let's make absolutely clear. I don't think we have a Silicon Valley. I think what we have is our own indigenous technology region that in many ways is better than Silicon Valley. Silicon Valley is very narrowly focused on consumer internet. What we have here in D.C. are more engineers and software engineers than any other place in the country, and we have more software companies. The challenge here is we have a large technology community that's been driven largely by technology services. What the Valley is good at is technology products, and the reason why we formed Tandem NSI is because there's a big trend right now and a need for the federal government to be acquiring national security technology products, and we need to remake our local economy to be competitive before Silicon Valley takes our candy from us.
Because the White House seems to be looking exclusively at Silicon Valley these days, and you've got all these
presidential fellows
coming in and so forth. What do you say to that?
Well, what I say to that is, hey, President Obama, give me a call. We're jumping him down. You shouldn't be looking for Google to solve technology challenges for the government. You know, the new CTO is from Google. Google's going right after national security innovation and advanced innovation. I mean, for Pete's sakes, they're trying to duplicate DARPA right now. And if we're not careful here in the Washington, D.C. region, innovation is going to continue to grow in this country, but it's not going to happen here.
Now, Ed, you've been working on some of the financing and debt problems that these small fledgling companies have. And, of course, you've got long experience as the founder of BTG, which it's hard to believe. It's almost a decade and a half since you sold that company.
That's exactly right. I was just mentioning that last night to someone. But the problem is, indeed, a lack of finance. This has been going on for many years around here, that the sources of capital are very much limited. Largely because venture folks don't really understand the technology services business. They do understand the product business and feel, I think, that there's more leverage and more return on investment potential. However, I mean, you only have to look at the history and the birth of the internet right here in the Washington area to know that we can develop technology and technology products that will have extreme value if only people would invest.
Ed makes a great point, and it is that the venture capital industry right now is becoming more and more a momentum-based industry, chasing opportunities to make rapid returns in 2 to 3 years. And the problem with that is that that means the money tends to cluster where there's opportunity for quick return. Building new industries, building hard technologies often takes 7 to 10 years and longer to do. The venture industry will follow into this market as we get better at building the next generation of technologies, whether it's space, robotics, nano, whatever. But what Ed's getting at and what I'm getting at is that we in D.C. need to remake our local economy and make sure there's enough financing and infrastructure to be able to get these companies and technology to the point where VCs will be interested in them.
All right. So you have started Tandem NSI mm-hmm. out of your profit venture.
Amplifier Ventures. And my consulting business. Yeah, that's right.
So tell us about Tandem NSI and what its aims are and how it's made up.
Well, the best way to describe it is, you know, Ed and I and Mike Daniels and others have been looking at this region for a while through the prism of various businesses. And over the last couple of years, Ed helping with Amplifier Ventures, what we began to see is that there were more and more agencies that were scratching their heads trying to figure out what to do about getting entrepreneurs to help them get technology out of the government and get entrepreneurs to do things for them. And so we basically put Amplifier Ventures on hold for the time being and to launch this not-for-profit initiative. And it's all about connecting entrepreneurs, startups, what the DOD calls non-traditional performers, with the federal lab establishment or with the agencies that need technology. It's a big honking thing, and we're making a lot of progress. I will just say, for anybody who wants to see the community, on the 25th of September, we're hosting an event on robotics where we've got DARPA, APL, and various other folks coming and showing off robotics technology. It's a great example of what we're doing.
All right, Ned, I wanted to ask you to comment on something that Jonathan said. He said traditional, and procurement and the way the government traditionally looks at things. So with this new venture that is coming out, the Tandem NSI and the entrepreneurial companies that want to get into the federal government, is the government geared to buy fast and move quickly enough for these types of companies? You may want to comment how procurement has changed over the years you and I have been looking at it, for a couple of decades now.
Well, the short answer to your question is no, emphatic no. The problem is that there is overall a lack of funding, a lack of resources available to the contractor community. In earlier generations, people would leverage their R&D dollars through government contracts, service contracts, and have some resources available to them to spend on developing products and innovation. Today, with the lowest price technically acceptable mentality, what you see is a deep pressure on companies not to do R&D, not to do the kinds of things that would make services companies really good in terms of innovation. So there's a lot of pressure by the procurement system to shrink resources. And so something like Tandem NSI has to come along. Otherwise, there won't be any kind of innovation going on in the community.
And that's the other part of it. Tandem NSI is not just about promoting opportunities for entrepreneurs. It's also about creating a constituency for change agents within the national security establishment. For example, the Defense Business Board released a study about a month ago saying Pentagon needs to more directly engage in small businesses. I went around to talk with a fair number of the agencies, national security agencies, over the summer around how do you get at innovators. And I released a white paper recently where we surveyed a lot of the initiatives. It's surprising how many of the agencies are now looking at alternative contract vehicles and ways to get at non-traditional performers and entrepreneurs, particularly in areas of R&D, particularly there. See, I've seen a lot of activity. And I think over the next 6 months, you're going to see a number of initiatives come our way because we're now showing there's a constituency for it.
We're speaking with Jonathan Aberman. He's the founder and managing partner of Amplifier Ventures. And Ed Bursoff is the founder of BTG, currently the chairman of Greenwich Associates. And I wanted to ask you also how the ARPAs, not just DARPA, the defense ARPA, but there's a lot of other ARPAs. I think Energy has one. Homeland Security has one. How can they fit into all of this? And how come they're not doing the kind of things to develop this entrepreneurial community that you think they should be doing?
Well, first of all, I want to say that folks from HSARPA, IARPA, and DARPA, and RPE as long as we're playing Washington, D.C., acronym bingo, I think everybody driving in from Manassas is just one. They are actually reaching across. I mean, we have already done pilot events with HSARPA, Air Force OSR, Army Rapid Equipment Force. It's surprising maybe to many of our listeners to hear how many people in the agencies want to be innovative and are reaching out. I believe that what we're accomplishing right now is creating the template for a large organization that can solve a lot of problems.
We're talking about entrepreneurs in Northern Virginia and how to inject new technology faster, especially in the area of national security, into the federal government. And Jonathan, tell us some of the early success stories with Tandem NSI, the nonprofit you've set up to bring these entrepreneurs and government together. What have some of them done locally?
Well, so we are engaged in a number of activities parallel track, and I'll give you some examples for each of them. So one of the things that we're doing is we're bringing experienced entrepreneurs who have grown product businesses and making them available through a venture advisor program to accelerate companies that have gotten federal R&D. So if you go to the Tandem NSI website, you'll see we've posted a number of case studies. We've engaged positively and helped a number of businesses grow so far. That's one great example. A second one is our advocacy work. Dan Doney at DIA has, for example, been pretty supportive and engaged with a lot of the stuff of Defense Intelligence Agency. And super guy. We had an event over the summer where we were talking about non-traditional performer engagement contract reform, and Dan said in front of a crowd, you know, I'm thinking about a new program that I only thought of because of Tandem and the advocacy work you've been doing. So that's super. The last example would be this robotics event that we're doing next week. You know, we've got PM from DARPA appearing. We've got the folks from Applied Physics Lab showing off their robotic arms and so forth. And the companies that presenting are companies that, frankly, would not have been known to the agencies if it wasn't for Tandem NSI. So it's a really nice example of how the ecosystem is bringing people together.
Ed, it sounds as if the people in the government side, too, are receptive to this kind of innovation and having ideas brought to them that could change their thinking.
And I think that's the really good news here is that the program managers on the government side are seeking innovative ideas to fund and to draw connections with. And Tandem represents a mechanism by which these agencies can find and fund, hopefully, the innovation that's going on in the private sector.
And another question I had for you, Ed, is this discussion and all, everything that people have been talking about for the last 2 years, 3 years about cloud computing and all these and virtualization, always the implication is that it leaves out the traditional systems integrators, although their buildings are still standing and there's still people going to work there. But why have they not been at the forefront, or so it seems, of some of the innovation that Silicon Valley, that the companies locally, these software entrepreneurs have been?
Well, most of the large system integrators are public companies, and with shrinking budgets and shrinking revenues in these companies, the amount of dollars they have available to do the R&D that they used to do. In fact, I approached one not that long ago about a specific innovation project and seeking R&D money. And basically, they said they don't have any. It's part of their infrastructure overhead, and there just aren't the resources that they used to have to make these investments. So it's a, as I say, a shrinking environment and lack of incentive for these companies to actually do it.
Jonathan?
And that's exactly the point. The point is that entrepreneurs, people who start small businesses, are very adept at making things happen with small amounts of resources. And secondarily, large companies that are established face what's called the innovator's dilemma. And you know, it's been written about that if you have a large market and you're going along, the last thing you want to do is cannibalize it. So the creative destruction that comes from startups is a natural aspect of technology or any type of capitalism. And what we're saying is that we need to make sure that that type of innovation, that destruction, that creative destruction, happens here.
And there's another point, is that the large companies approach this as an all-or-nothing kind of event. So if you think about funding 5 or 10 different innovation ideas, they can't do that. They think large. So if they'd rather fund one and bet it all on that one. And that's really not the way this works. It works with multiple ideas coming to the forefront.
And that's the dirty little secret about Silicon Valley. Silicon Valley is a great place to start companies for entrepreneurs because the incumbents buy them. What we need to do in Washington, D.C. is we need to grow companies that will be relevant to our large industrial base. In other words, the government contracts and integrators ultimately are going to be doing a lot of M&A, either here or across country over the next 5 years, to buy technology products to sell to the government.
So what about the channel? I mean, traditionally, companies that start up that have a cool product, could be hardware or software, they use value-added resellers or integrators or even distributors to help them get it in front of customers. Mm-hmm. Can that model still apply for this new type of company?
Well, yeah. I mean, the reselling and distribution model does work, but they've got to get the product to market to begin with, and I think that's really where the large issue is.
And don't forget that more and more these days, there is not a clear dark line between commercial and government products. I mean, like the Amazon deal recently in the cloud. And that's the point, is that there's a whole bunch of commercially available technologies that should be bought and brought into government. I mean, COTS is a big issue as well. And so,
and if you go back, I think the last time a large integrator bought an innovative little company to come to market with was when the old SAIC bought Network Solutions and kind of captured the internet, basically.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I haven't seen anything like that in any recent
history. Starting to see it in cyber a little bit. I think cyber is a thin edge of the wedge.
Yeah, so cyber, I mean, and this is an area that is a big innovator in cyber, right?
Sure, naturally. Cyber is a great example of how national security is changing because with the democratization of innovation. Look at the J.P. Morgan situation. We don't know if it was a pimply-faced teenager, was a terrorist group, or was a nation. We have no idea, and that's the problem or the issue with national security these days. You have to be nimble, you have to be fast, and frankly, entrepreneurs are more nimble, and we have a lot of them, and we need to put them to work.
Now, at the Air Force Association conference yesterday, that's going on all this week, there's a big trade show, and I was talking to a business development person from a weapons manufacturer, and they had models of these cool-looking weapons. I wouldn't want one to land in my backyard. Mm-hmm. But he was trying to explain, you know, the sales cycle for this, which is very complex. I mean, when you're trying to – till the DOD makes an order to buy 10,000 things that hang from a plane, whatever the case might be, it's a long process. But he said, no matter what you do, golf games or great whining, whatever you do, you still have to have a requirement. And so when you have entrepreneurs here that have great ideas in national security, how do you get the government to make sure there's a requirement that can be fulfilled by that type of product? That's sort of putting the cart before the horse.
One of the mistakes that entrepreneurs make is not understanding that markets make products. Products don't make markets.
Right.
So they have to understand the marketplace. They have to understand what the government need is. The government has to do a better job of articulating what their requirements are so that the innovators can actually respond with something that makes sense. But if it's the other way around, those kind of companies are doomed.
And we also need to make sure we separate research and development from acquisition. And there's a big role for non-traditional performers and entrepreneurs to play in R&D. And my experience being a venture capitalist for a long time is that if you build a product that has an early adoption, markets will find you. And I think the same thing would true in the government.
All right. So in the minute or so we have left, Jonathan, what is next for Tandem NSI? What will you be doing? You said there's a robotics conference, although I think of robotics as having a big hardware component.
Well, actually, robotics has hardware, but it also has an enormous software component these days. And remember, robotics is everything from artificial arms to drones to, it's crazy how broad it is. And the point of this all is that whether it's the robotics event or the entrepreneurs were featured, I'm doing an event tomorrow with Jim Chang, the most recently Secretary of Commerce and Trade, for example. We did an entrepreneurship series. We'll be doing various events through the fall and more workshops and more policy work. The rest of the year is going to be very busy. My hope for 2015 is that we've established this organization as something that's demonstrably important in the region, and we'll just continue to grow it through a combination of state and private funding. We think there's a permanent need here, and we plan to fill it.
And do you think that the academic community and whatever is people leaving companies, there's enough fertile territory for enough people to keep it going the way Silicon Valley is kind of a self-igniting situation?
I think people is our great strength, and that's what we have to capitalize on is the talent of our people.
All right. Jonathan Aberman is founder and managing director of Amplifier Ventures. Ed Bursoff, founder of BTG, later sold to Titan, now chairman of Greenwich Associates. Thanks so much for joining me this morning.
Thanks for having us.
My pleasure.